The following Dharma talk was given by Katie Yosha Scott Childress. Yosha is a senior student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or to find out more about our various programs, visit us online at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. My name is Yosha, and I'm a lay student of the Mountains and Rivers Order, and Hojin Sensei asked me to come and offer a talk today. She is in New Zealand attending to our Kiwi Sangha, and we'll be heading back very soon, so we'll send her hopes for a very safe journey back here. I wanted to talk about the five strengths, which are strengths that we all have, and they're part of the Lojong mind trainings, which some of us were studying last fall. The slogan, the Lojong's mind training slogan, they're always these very short, pithy slogans that help us remember. And, you know, a lot of our training in Buddhism is about remembering what's important and remembering to practice and remembering what we lose sight of very easily. And so the slogan is, a summary of the essential instructions, train in the five forces. So these five forces, five strengths, five powers are what I want to talk to you about. And these mind trainings come down to us mostly from this Indian master, Atisha, who lived around 1,000 years ago. And the first of these five forces is resolve or resolution. And so I felt like this resonated for me being at the beginning of the year and making resolutions, really taking stock and thinking about what we'd like to maybe change or work on for this coming year. So the five forces are also translated as five strengths, five powers, energizing factors, and they are associated with the virtue or paramita of exertion. So this is one of the sort of virtuous behaviors that we train in is exertion. So what does that mean to exert ourselves? And exertion is also translated as vigor, effort, zeal, diligence, energy. So if we're going to take up this path of Zen Buddhism, it's going to require us to direct our energy into it and put some effort into it. It doesn't just happen to us. We are it. So what I've made some resolutions this year, and I imagine maybe you have too. Usually the resolutions often take the form of like, I want to do less of this and more of that, whatever it is. Forbes magazine interviewed 1,000 people in America this year to find out their 2024 resolutions. And the top resolution was physical fitness. People wanted to improve their physical fitness. Other top resolutions were improving their finances, improving mental health. Hallelujah, here we are. Losing weight and improving diet. So when we're making a resolution and in practice we're really considering, what do I really, really want? And so my resolutions this year had to do with being more caring for others, less ruthless efficiency, getting stuff done, and more noticing, slowing down, looking at what's right in front of me. So these mind trainings are always pointing us toward awakening. There's a word, bodhicitta, that describes this aspiration to awaken ourselves and to help others to awaken. It's something that's really felt personally as a shift, like kind of coming home to yourself and then helping others to do that as well. Pema Chodron describes it as opening the heart. Kensei Rinpoche, one of the Tibetan masters, says this, this resolution is, for example, the taking of a firm decision that for this month, this year, or until we die, or until we attain enlightenment, we will not abandon bodhicitta, this resolve to wake up. Even though hurt or injured by others, we will not give way to anger. And this strong resolution should be reinforced again and again. So what does it mean to be awake? I mean, if we're trying to wake up, or how is it right now? Are we awake? Are we asleep? What's going on? So awakening to me means being free from suffering. And being free from suffering means not being dragged around by my habitual way or ways of seeing myself as separate, as something that's fixed, that's flawed, that's incomplete or unworthy. And it also means not seeing others as separate, fixed, flawed, incomplete, or unworthy. And also seeing our environment as not separate, not fixed, not flawed, not incomplete, and not unworthy. So if we're not separate, and we're not fixed, what are we? What are we in the midst of? And so we set our sights on being awake and investigating, like really yearning to investigate what our life is. So the five powers are five strengths are like a strength that we build. Like if we do weight training, we get stronger, or do some kind of endurance practice with repetition. The strengths don't necessarily inhere in us. Like we have some inner strength and we just like flick a switch and then we have all the resolution that we need to be liberated. Whatever is binding us has been created through a lot of habit and repetition. So it's not going to disappear at the flick of a switch. So we have to keep resolving over and over again that we don't want to just keep rolling in the same way anymore and expecting different results. We have to have this determination, this resolve, because it's really easy for us to fall back into what's familiar and comfortable, even when what's comfortable isn't fun anymore, if that makes sense. So in Zen, we do this, a lot of this investigation, opening this treasure box in Zazen, in our seated meditation. And it's not easy. Concentration is not easy. I am here to testify. I fail at it a lot. And so we have to have this determination, like, oh, okay, I'm coming back again and again and again from wherever my mind goes, away from this moment, this seat, this breath. Keep starting over. Trungpa Rinpoche says about this resolve, strong determination means not wasting your time. It is also making it a point that you and the practice are one. Practice is your way of strengthening yourself. So for those of us who've been around Buddhism for a while, we probably have formed an idea of what enlightenment is. And I think at least for me, it has something along the lines of this idea that we're going to have this really deep transformational experience that's going to change us for the better. And we do have experiences and insights that do change us for the better. And we still are the same miserable person. And so, again, we come back to continuing to practice, seeing more and more deeply what it is that's still holding us. And we have an idea that if we work with a teacher, that somehow we're going to become enlightened. But even if we have like the most amazing teacher in the world, we have to do all of the work. The teacher is basically there to say, not yet. Yeah, that's okay. You know, stay on the path. But, you know, they're just helping us to see what's helpful and not helpful. But they're not going to do it for us. We have to do all of this ourselves with our own determination. So we have to make this really personal connection to what our aspiration is, what our resolve is. So these trainings go in a sort of order. And so this particular training comes after some preliminary practices, contemplating the preciousness of your human birth. So we have this really rare opportunity with our life. We only get one shot at this. What does Ocean Vuong say? Single-use life. Just, this is it. We're going to use this, and it'll be used up, and that'll be it. So here we are with this human body and human consciousness, this rare opportunity And so we have to take heed and exert ourselves, like really look at what are we putting our energy into? What are we doing with all of this vast human consciousness that we're endowed with? What are we paying attention to? You know, there was an airplane incident recently that I was thinking about where the side panel of this airplane like blew out in midair. And thinking about if you were on that plane, and luckily they landed and were okay, but if you were on that plane and the side panel blows out, and the captain comes on to the PA and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to say, we're going down." So how long do you have now? I don't know. 5 minutes, 10 minutes before the plane hits the ground. And so suddenly, like those lame pretzels, like why don't they have something gluten-free? I mean, and then they have peanuts and it's all allergens. Like, hasn't anybody thought this through? And God damn it, that guy, why didn't he cover his mouth when he sneezed? Because I'm sure I'm going to get sick, and all of this stuff, whatever lather we were in, it's gone, right? We have 5 or 10 minutes before the plane hits the ground. So what are we going to do with that moment? If we have people around us who we care about, are we going to neglect to tell them that we love them? Hope not. If we have people who annoy the crap out of us, are we going to see how pathetic we both are? Let it go, finally? So in our training as Buddhists, we're not trying to be morbid or morose, but we really do need to keep death close so that we keep remembering what's important. And it helps us to see how petty we can be and how we waste our time and our energy being petty. So we can let go of that, be free from that. So this kind of resolution, I think of it as like the opposite of complacency, right? We're not going to be complacent. We have this wish to wake up, to open our heart. And we're not going to be complacent about just letting that wish sit in a closet somewhere. We're going to keep it right here. Keep some faith that we can do this, that we have more that we can be and we can offer in the world than our ego-driven insecurities or whatever. So that's our first strength, okay, is our power of resolution. Our second strength is familiarization. And that's what happens when we practice. When we first start sitting down and meditating, we can be really appalled by what's going on in our mind. And even when we've been meditating a while, we can still be appalled. There's some pretty vile stuff going on. It's not pretty. I'm not proud of a lot of the thoughts that I think. But we start becoming familiar and being like, oh, this is a rerun. I've seen this one before, like 40 times. And so we start becoming less sort of enchanted and pulled in by the stories that we have about ourselves and about other people with this familiarization, which means we sit down and we see it. We see these things that are not easy to see about ourselves, and we get used to it, right? So we start to sort of settle down once we sit more and sit into this and find some calm and spaciousness. And that also becomes familiar. So then we have something in our body that is familiar, that is not fight or flight. And we start being able to notice, like, whoa, I'm in fight or flight right now. What just happened? What's going on? So that we can see it. We're not just acting out so much, hopefully. So karma is a really big, big deal, which is our actions, what we do. And we are kind of this rolling bundle of habits. And we have habits, habitual ways that we deal with stuff that's difficult. So we might feel uneasy, lonely, insecure, upset. And what do we reach for? Do we reach for our phone? Do we reach for chocolate? Sex? What is it? What do we reach for to try and fix it? So this familiarization is pointing to being familiar with these uneasy states and being able to tolerate some of that in your body without reaching for something outside to fix it, knowing that we actually have the medicine, that our body is the medicine, and that we can find our way through it. We get more curious about what's going on, try and look below the surface. So we're like caught in some dispute we're having with somebody, and you know, we keep doubling down on why I'm right, and I don't see why he said that, because, and et cetera. We're just caught in this loop, and we stop and really look at, like, what am I protecting? What's going on here? And for me, there's usually fear. There's some kind of fear that I'm somehow protecting. And so we're becoming familiar with what it feels like to actually just feel our fear. Be with it. It's okay. It's okay to feel fear. Sit with it. See what it is. What is it made of? What is that fear made of? Is it a thing? Can you touch it? How long does it last? It's a beautiful thing. Being able to have some space to actually work with these difficult states. So this is our power of familiarization. It's really turning toward practice, seeing what's going on, being interested, not in defending ourselves or in protecting ourselves or in trying to fix it, but just being with it for a little bit. The third power is the power of positive seeds. Pema Chodron says, this is the positive seed that is within you, experienced as a yearning to practice and wake up. Jamgon Khantro Rinpoche says, always concentrate your full energy, physical, verbal, and mental, on virtuous activity. Never be content with your efforts to arouse and strengthen bodhicitta. So these this metaphor of seeds is used in Yogacara teachings, which is a whole Buddhist schema of how our mind works. And so we consciously plant these seeds of virtue with our actions, with what we do, with our body and our speech and our minds. You know, we see people all the time at restaurants who are all sitting at a table looking at their phones. Or you see somebody talking to another person and one's looking at their phone while the other one's talking. And maybe we've all been on one end of that interaction or the other. So we can start with really small things like our attention. What are we paying attention to? Are we giving somebody who's in front of us our full attention? Are we thinking about something to say while they're saying what they're saying so that we can look clever or something like that? Or are we just giving our attention to somebody? That's virtuous activity. Just that. Just giving that completely to somebody else. Even for a moment, like even if you're at a convenience store, you know, not just like pay and run, but thank you. Yeah. See that person. They're a whole human being just like us. So other virtuous acts like having gratitude and expressing it, giving gifts. You know, when I consider all of the conditions that are necessary for me to be here right now, I'm well-fed, clothed, I have a job, I have an education, I have health, good health. So many different conditions are present for us to be here right now. It's just, there's so much all the time for us. And it's really easy, at least for me, to think about what I'm lacking. What I don't have. And so remembering gratitude, remembering all of the things that we need in order to do really simple things, like get out of bed, go to the bathroom all by ourselves. Remembering to be grateful is planting these seeds, right? Remembering all of the people that are required for us to do all of what we do, like get food, right? Bringing our attention to these things, what we're doing with our minds really matters. We're creating the whole world with our sense of insufficiency and lack, or our sense of, God, I'm so grateful. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So this is what we're watering. We water seeds with our energy, our attention, with what we do in the present moment. Traleg Kyagban says, nothing goes to waste when we plant positive seeds with even the smallest positive intention. In this way, it is important to start paying attention to our every action instead of indulging in negative self-talk. Whether something is small or large is not the issue. It's about what we're trying to cultivate and whether it takes root in our mental continuum or not. Practices such as generosity, patience, vigor, meditation, or loving kindness have to take root in our mind streams in order to be effective. All virtuous qualities develop from small beginnings, but once they take root, we can never lapse or backslide. How beautiful that we can plant these seeds and we can't lapse or backslide. I have the sense of backsliding a lot, but I'll take his word for it. Maybe the backslide isn't as bad as I think it is, right? There's definitely positive momentum going on, even amidst a lot of backsliding. So intention, as he says, can be the smallest seed, and then when it's watered, it becomes something positive. So make an intention. Make an intention. There's a Buddhist meditation manual that's called Stopping and Seeing. So we sit down and stop moving and start seeing how distracted we are. Start noticing how we're moving around in a hurry. I'm getting aggressive. Get out of my way. I gotta get there. I'm in a hurry. There's a lot of self-importance, right, in that kind of moving around. Our environment, we extract things in a hurry. We produce things in a hurry. We want everything at our doorstep in a hurry. We order it. What do you mean it can't be here tomorrow? So that kind of hurry, that kind of aggression, we're planting seeds with all of that. And we plant seeds with patience and with looking closely at what's going on. The fourth strength is translated in different ways. Revulsion, reproach, exposure. So this strength is about uncovering the ways we get lost and becoming disenchanted with these habitual ways that we get stuck in our minds. You know, we live in a culture that upholds gain, getting to the top, competition, individualism. So I don't think we should be surprised if our thoughts are very self-centered and our intentions have been that way. But being self-centered never brings us connection, acceptance, calm, clarity. It actually just doesn't really make us happy. But we've been sold a bill of goods that it will. So we have to look at what really, really is nourishing for us. So as we become more familiar with how our view of reality gets distorted, we become less interested in being that way. That's the revulsion or the reproach, okay? So we see that we're lusting after somebody, just like, yeah, I'm not interested in rolling that way, just not interested in it anymore. So we have a lot of different states we're moving through. And this revulsion is not like attacking ourselves. It's just not buying in to our stories anymore. Because we've seen them. It's a rerun, after all. They're all reruns. It's very dull. So we have to be interested in seeing that. You know, seeing that we are watching a rerun. We have a grudge against somebody. That didn't come up once, right? To be a grudge, you have to think it a bunch of different times. So, you know, there's somebody or something that we don't like. And instead of just being able to see that, we keep embellishing and doubling down on it, adding to that fire. So this exposure or reproach or revulsion is seeing that, seeing how we do that, and not wanting to do that anymore. It's really turning away from that kind of, that way of being. I was thinking about it like a word processor, like you're getting ready to write something. You've got a blank page, and then all of a sudden, like, the page is like filled up with all of these things, these sentences, and you're like, what the hell? And instead of like trying to like backspace and delete or edit or, you know, keep adding more to the story or justifying it, you know, just see it. It's like, wow, that just, wow, that all came up. Wow. Don't add to it. Social media is like a whole empire that's built on fantasy, taking us away from our present moment into some imagined future, some imagined better version of ourself than what we are right now. It's like being addicted to something that we know isn't good for us, but we just keep coming back. So we have to become disenchanted, you know, where we're not under that spell anymore. We're not buying in. Traleg Kyogban says, we must carry a torch powerful enough to illuminate our own depths. See what are we reaching for? Why are we reaching for it? I just finished reading Michelle Obama's autobiography, Becoming. She's just such a phenomenal person, obviously. And of course, reading her book makes me have fantasies about meeting her and trying to impress her. And, you know, she's Michelle Obama. Like, she's the most awesome human being. And, you know, continually trying to maneuver and be this special somebody that's different than this somebody takes a lot of energy, takes away from where we are and who's right in front of us and what's right in front of us. Traleg Kyogban says, fantasies appear real to us because of the twisted logic we use to convince ourselves that our illusions are real. The power of exposure is the ability to break down our experiences and review them for what they are so that we can gradually curtail perverse reasoning and gain insight into our mental states. So we're developing this familiarization with the second power, and with these seeds, we're learning to try and see these things when it's a seed, when it's something small, without letting it grow into a big tree of spite or lust or whatever it is, right? We want to see it when it's small. Oh, I should look at a new car. That's a small seed. Start watering it, and you'll be lost in an internet right wormhole trying to figure out what's the best car and car payments and, you know, do I really need a new car right now? No, actually, I don't. And so being able, you know, again, this is what our meditation practice is. We're being able to look at what's coming up and try and see it. It's something small. It's a thought, right? And it gets a lot of power when we start throwing some, you know, wood on that fire, embellishing, fantasizing, going on and on. And it takes on a whole new form when we actually put some action to it, right? That's our karma. That's what we start creating in our lives. And so this keeps turning us back to this resolution to wake up, to be awake, to be of benefit to others. Keep coming back, because then that becomes the seed that we're watering. That becomes how we're showing up in the world, right? We look around and see lots and lots of problems and conflict and all manner of troubles. So how do we stop adding to that with our own crazy and at least take responsibility for this one, this house? So the fifth strength is the strength of dedication or aspiration. So we have to not only have an aspiration, but it's important to voice that aspiration, to actually give it words. Aspirations can change over time and be kind of amorphous, and that's okay. But there's something really powerful to putting words to an aspiration that you have. I can say I vow to practice this path of awakening and to offer any fruits of awakening, insight, or wisdom to all those who suffer. That can be my aspiration. Before a period of zazen, I usually try to make an aspiration, especially when I'm doing a meditation intensive and there are many periods of zazen throughout the day. I correspond with inmates who are, you know, in prison for a long time. And so I make an aspiration, dedicate my sitting, my period of sitting, my day of practice to this person who I know is sitting in segregation and has been for years in a maximum security prison and may never have the opportunities that I have to practice. So whatever I have, I want to dedicate to them and hope that it can be of some benefit to them. Because we're not just practicing for ourselves. So there's this dedication of merit, which isn't so much part of our culture. But when you think about this temple and who started it, teachers in our lineage and the people who make it happen and continue to run it, our teachers, our students, our residents, our sangha who come in and breathe life into this, and then all of us who showed up. I mean, this, we are the living light of this practice. We are what makes this real, all of this energy. And so I dedicate all of the merit that I have accumulated back to these teachers and back to everyone who has made this possible. This is a beautiful opportunity that we have. And so we can offer that back. Okay, I don't know where I had to. Anyway, I'm really inspired by young people in our sangha, and real. I see their bodhicitta, their wish to wake up, and I know that carrying that forward, that all of this, the merit of all of what has brought us to this point will continue with their commitment. And so I'm really inspired when I see that. The Buddha said before he died, you know, his practitioners were freaking out. They're like, what are we going to do without you? And he said, wait, this was never about me. Be a lamp unto yourself. This is about you. You're going to do all the work. Each of us, all the work. So we're practicing to see that light in ourselves and see it in others. And we're practicing to remember how to practice when we lose sight of that light. So remembering these strengths, these are our superpowers that we have, that we can call up when we're in a place that's dark or very narrow. We have these superpowers, strong determination. Remember that you want to wake up and that you're going to do what it takes. That's your determination. Familiarization. You've got to practice it. Get used to seeing things that you're not proud of about yourself. It's humbling. It's good. Watering positive seeds. What we do matters. We can be of benefit. We can show gratitude. Exposure, revulsion, disenchantment with our self-centeredness. That's our superpower. We can call on it. And then the aspiration that we consciously articulate to ourselves to awaken and alleviate our own suffering and that of others. Those are our superpowers, but we have to actually do them in order for them to be powers. They just atrophy and become flabby if we don't use them. We've got to strengthen them, turn towards what we have. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.